They're all big, but no question, you haven't gotten a win in a little while. You know, the sense of urgency has to be high, and you know, we obviously want to get back on the right track. We want to be a team that wins a lot of games.
That's Captain John Tavares on the importance of the Leafs game against Chicago tonight. The Leafs are winless in four and will look to end the skid as they wrap up their road trip in Chicago tonight. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. Pre-game coverage starts at 7. Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph with the call at 7:30. I'm Julia Teixeira. I've got Al's brother Mike DiStefano with me as always on Leafs Lunch. AB, the Leafs, winless in four, they're facing a Chicago Blackhawks team that's obviously in turmoil off the ice. Stan Bowman stepped down as GM yesterday in response to the investigation about how the Hawks handled sexual assault allegations by a former player. We'll get into that with Katie Strang later this hour. She, along with our own Rick Westhead, has been heading the investigation of this story from the start. But a look at tonight's game. Chicago, we know they're in turmoil off the ice, haven't been looking great on the ice either so far this year.
No, it's been pretty bad. I mean, we think that it's been bad for the Leafs. At least the Leafs have had a couple leads. They have won a couple games. You look at the Blackhawks, 0-5-1 on the year and have yet to lead. And what's more frustrating if you're a Blackhawks fan, I mean, off the ice, there's a lot to be frustrated about. But on the ice, I mean, they went out and they made significant changes to this team to hope to kind of put them back into a window where they can compete with Kane and Taze. They went out, they added Marc-Andre Fleury, a Vezina candidate. They went out and they added Seth Jones, and they gave him a $9.5 million extension. And it really hasn't paid off. I mean, this team is 0-5-1 to start the year. Marc-Andre Fleury has been abysmal. He went from one of the best goaltenders in the league to having awful, awful numbers, a 575 goals against, an 839 save percentage, a negative 7.92 goals saved above average, and to the point where it sounds like he's not even going to play tonight. Like, they haven't played in four games in 4 days, and they're saying, we're not going to toss out the flower. Let's give this Kevin Lankinen kid a go. Maybe he can try and spark something with this team because it hasn't been working for Fleury.
Yeah, it's not just between the pipes defensively for the Blackhawks that's been a mess recently. How about Seth Jones in that 9.5 schmill contract? It doesn't even kick in next year. Seth Jones has been on the ice for every 5-5 goal scored this season for the Blackhawks. Not a good look for a guy who just signed a huge ticket.
No, and I remember I was watching a Chicago game earlier this week, and I can't remember who they were playing, but he made a very similar play. Remember when Engvall had that turnover in his own end? He just kind of threw it across the blue line, and it got picked off and then ended up going and scoring a goal. The exact same thing happened. Carbon copy with Seth Jones. He just lazily tried to throw it across the ice, and it gets picked off at his blue line, and in comes the guy, and he scores. And it's just been a terrible, terrible season for Seth Jones. I don't know what's going on with him, but he really does need to pick it back up. Like, we recall Seth Jones, us saying that he was, you know, one of the top up-and-coming defensemen that bubble playoff series against Columbus. He did a great job of shutting down Austin Matthews and company, and he's gone over to Chicago. It has not gone well.
Yeah, and in addition to the off-ice allegations and the turmoil from that, the on-ice happenings, which haven't been very good for the Blackhawks, they've got 5 players in COVID-19 protocol that won't see the ice tonight. Patrick Kane, he's pretty good, eh? One of their better players, eh? Jonathan Taves, Borgstrom, Stillman, and Kara all on the COVID-19 protocol list right now for the Hawks.
I'll be honest with you, I'm slightly surprised, because there's also 3 coaches, including Mark Crawford, one of their main assistants, who's also on the COVID protocol list. I'm a little surprised that this game is like happening. I know we spoke yesterday to Darren Dreger, and he reached out to the NHL, and he had asked them, hey, do you think there's a chance that this game could end up getting canceled due to the COVID protocols? And then we saw all this information come out yesterday. Tonight's going to have a weird tone to it in Chicago. The fact that it's in Chicago,
yeah.
I'd be curious to also see what the crowd's going to be tonight.
Their sellout streak just ended.
Yeah.
It was like over 500 games. One of the longest, or was it the
I think it was
longest sellout streak in the NHL. Came to an end. But then there's the Leafs, and you know that they've got issues of their own. Leafs are 0-14 on the power play in their last 5 games, and they've shaken things up a little bit at practice, AB.
Yeah, looking like they finally, I think they're listening to us because we've been speaking about this for a few games. That and not just us, but almost everybody covering the team.
I feel like they might have me blocked on Twitter or
possibly. But the power play has been abysmal. I mean, we all know this, and it looks like yesterday at practice, they're switching things up a little bit. Seems like William Nylander and Mitch Marner are going to switch spots. So Nylander now going to play in the bumper role, and Marner returns to the half wall. I like this if that means that they're going to use the bumper position as more of a shooting threat, as more of an offensive threat, as opposed to being, like a playmaking passer option, which is what we've seen it mostly in the past. But I've seen other power plays around the league. I know the Canucks do a really good job of using Bo Horvat in that role, and he's somebody they'll kind of filter the puck down low and then get it back up to him in the bumper, and he'll rip a one-timer. And they've been very successful doing stuff like that. So if you can send William Nylander, who's got a good threat of a shot, and he's willing to actually shoot the puck, unlike some people on this team, I believe that this potentially can have some good benefits here, but it's only if they use it properly. So unless they're going to change the way that they're kind of using this format here, I still am a little questionable to having Marner along the half wall and using Nylander in that bumper role. But looks like we probably are going to get a good look at it tonight. They're over the last 14, so it really can't get any worse.
No, it seems like just about everybody has a take on how to fix the Leafs, how to fix their power play, what's going on there. We'll bring in someone with some serious hockey credentials right now to talk about it, AB. We've got longtime NHL head coach and NHL network analyst Bruce Boudreau on the phone. Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Fantastic. Thank you so much. We were just talking. Everybody's got an idea about the Leafs, huh, Bruce? Everybody's got a take.
Everybody. I can't get away from it. Every friend of mine is phoning me and saying, what's going on? And everybody's panicking, and we're not even out of October yet.
I know, it's crazy. It's only 7 games in, going into game 8 tonight, and then already the alarm bells are off. But Bruce, like, winless in the last 4, like you said, the sky is somewhat falling in Toronto early on.
Pieces of the CN Tower just flying off. They like, are. Things are amiss here.
What sticks out to you, though, as their biggest problem right now?
Well, as a problem, I just don't think they're competing as hard as they have been in the past. I mean, I think they're expecting things to come a little easier, and you can tell if you watch the games last night that two other teams are in the very same boat. And when I'm talking Tampa, was thinking the same thing. And if you watch their game last night, they competed their butts off. And it just finally sank in, and they did what became the team that they're capable of being, and maybe that's a jump start when they beat Pittsburgh. And the other team was Vegas. I mean, Vegas went in, and now they just out-competed Colorado. And I think when the Leafs get into that sense of urgency, that desperate stage, like those two teams thought they were in, that they will come out and out-compete the teams. And when they out-compete them, their skill will show, and they will get back to doing what they do best, and that's win games and score goals.
Yeah, and I think what the question here is, like, how do you get them to finally compete? Like, what buttons do you push as the coach to get this team going? You've got so many superstars. You've dealt with this before. You've coached superstars. Like, how do you get them going? How do you increase this compete level that the Maple Leafs aren't showing early in the season?
Well, I mean, to say how, it's not the same for everybody. I mean, I think it's the coach's job, and I use this term, to find the Achilles heel on every player and use that against them to make them play their best. And what I mean by that is, let's say one player, you take ice time away from them and it'll make them play better. Other players, you have to maybe embarrass in front of the team to get to play better. Others don't like the embarrassment thing. You might have to grab him aside and talk to him privately to get him to play better. But it's up to me, it's up to the coach to find out what makes this guy tick and what button to push. And every player's got a different personality, so you've got to find all 23 buttons to push to make this guy great. And that's, I'm sure Sheldon knows all of these guys, and I'm sure that's what he's trying to do. But, I mean, it's not a blanket statement where you just sit there and say, okay, boys, we're going to have a tough practice tomorrow if you don't play hard or something. Some of that might go in one ear and out the other. Guys don't care about that. But there's something that makes it tick. And, I mean, obviously, John Cooper found out what it was and knows the players he has. He used it last night. Peter DeBoer used it last night. And now I'm sure Sheldon is going to use it for the game against Chicago.
Longtime NHL coach Bruce Boudreau on the phone. Bruce, John Tavares is the captain of this Leafs team. He's kind of the epitome of a lead by example type of guy that wears the C. What sort of conversations would you have with him if you were Sheldon Keefe right now?
Well, I would be picking his brain and asking him what he thinks. I always tried to get a really good rapport with the captain that I could sit down and talk to on a basis where they're not thinking that I'm interviewing them or anything. And so I would just ask them, what do you think? You know, what do we have to do? Are we okay? Like, I mean, are we going to come around? Am I doing something that the players are not liking? Do I have to change the practice style? Do I have to, you know, I would ask him for his opinion on things. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily use them all, because I always tell my players that, hey, my door is always open, but it just might not hear what you want to hear. But you're more than welcome to come and talk to me. But I would really use the captain and talk to him, because he's usually got a really pulse of what's going on in the room.
Sheldon kind of keeps talking about learning lessons from all of these losses that are starting to pile up. Is this just kind of coach speak, or do you think this is beneficial for them to kind of go through this adversity early on in the season?
I don't think it's bad to go through adversity if you learn from it. I recall that in a very similar situation, because the Leafs, I think, have scored 12 goals in 7 games. Yeah. They haven't scored too many anyway. I was reading that today. And when I was in my last year in Anaheim, we started out 1-7-2. And believe me, you think, talk about a hot seat. You think you're getting fired every moment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we got shut out 6 times in the first 10 games. And you stuck with it. I had so many individual meetings with all the players at that point. We ended up won the Jennings and won the, won the division. And had the best goals against, and I think we were second in offense when it all came to fruition by the end of the year. So let's not panic and think that everything is done. But but these are conversations that you have, and adversity sometimes is good to go through as long as you're learning from it. So you can learn from it, just don't make the same mistakes again.
Bruce, the group you had in Washington often gets compared to this Leafs team. It was a team that had a ton of regular season success, but then you get to the playoffs and you can't quite get over that hump. Obviously, that team went on to win a Stanley Cup, and that's kind of being used as the argument in favor of the Leafs to keep this core together. Do you see any similarities between this group and that group you had in Washington?
Yeah, I do. I mean, and sometimes the group we had in Washington, when Ovi was only, he was 20 to 23, and Nick was 20 to 23, or 18 to 23. Semin was 23 years old. I mean, Mike Green was a very young 22, and we had those kind of guys. And sometimes they had to learn how to lose and how to hate losing so much. Like, I remember talking to Alex, and they thought, we're going to win soon, and it's going to happen. But then it went, like, when there was the 4.5 years that I was there, and then there was another 4 years before Barry got them. And I mean, they had to hate losing so much that you could see the elation on the face of the Caps guys when they won the cup. It was just,
yeah,
like, they got tired of people saying, all right, when are you guys going to win? And I think the learning, going through the losing, made them a better team. But it takes time when you're young, because you think you're going to be great every year, and you don't realize that, hey, listen, the window keeps closing and closing and closing. And I think the Leafs will get there. I think they've definitely got the guys that are, they're not only superstars in Toronto. They'd be superstars on any team in the league. And they're going to come out of their slump. And they care a lot. I mean, if you look at Austin Matthews' face when he scored the goal the other night, his first goal, it was like that was the greatest feeling you could see. And that's his first goal of the year for a guy that had 199 goals already. So guys normally don't have that kind of reaction with their first goal of the year if you're that successful. But I mean, it's going to same thing happen when Mitch scores and gets a couple points. You're going to see him all pumped up, and it'll be like the piano off the back, and Nylander will get going, and Tavares will get going. Just the history says that these guys are going to do it. I mean, now I think it would be a lot easier if the support group, who has been scoring, continues to score to alleviate some of the pressure off of these guys. But it's going to happen. You can't give up on them this early in the stage. I mean, if this was Thanksgiving and they had two wins and they were 12 points out of a playoff spot, then I'd start to worry. But I mean, the Leafs are going to be good, and they're going to get there. And I think instead of us panicking, let's just keep supporting them.
And one of those issues that has kind of plagued the Leafs also, which is leading to a lack of offense early in the year, is a struggling power play. It's something that has plagued them since the back half of last year, and it's going right back into this season, 0 for the last 14. Bruce, is there anything that you see on this power play and maybe a way that you feel like you can get this thing going, something that maybe you've tried in the past to get a power play that's going struggling, whether that's switching up the personnel, switching up the systems? Is there a way that you would fix this power play?
You don't know how many times people in Toronto have asked me this. I think for the last 2 years, I think that's all I've talked about is the power play. And I mean, everybody looks at it and goes, you know, we got these great players. How come we're not scoring? And they've tried pretty well everything except for one thing, I think, and that's to break up the unit that is the number one unit and have two units. And get a little mixture in there. That's the only thing I can see. I mean, they've had Marner in the middle. They've had Nylander in the middle. They've had Tavares in the middle. They've had Matthews in the middle. I mean, Nashville was going through a problem, the same thing. And what they did is they put Josi in the middle the other night and had Granlund on the point. So, I mean, they're trying everything except using different players on the first unit. And I think if they broke it up a little bit, I think they might have some success.
Richie's a guy who looks pretty good in front of the net on PP2 for the Leafs. You had him in Anaheim. He's been kind of a controversial guy in Toronto so far. People didn't love him on the first line with Matthews and Marner, but playing with Spezza and Simmons, he looked pretty good the other night. If you're Sheldon Keefe, how do you maximize his potential as a Leaf?
I think that's a perfect spot for him on the fourth line. I mean, it's a big line. They're playing against the 5-6 defense usually of the other team, and there's no expectations. Nick is a quiet guy, and he's big and he's strong, and he was really effective on the Boston second power play unit in front of the net as well. But I mean, again, it's being new to the Toronto scene. I mean, he's never, look at, he was in Anaheim, and Boston has, yeah, they have their press all over them too, but at the same time, Boston's got so many other, you know, teams that they worry about that it's, hockey necessarily isn't number one. He's seeing new things in Toronto that he's never seen before, you know, I mean, and he's got to get used to it. When he played junior, he was in Peterborough. I mean, not a lot of scrutiny there either, but I think right now he's in the right spot. I mean, when you throw him right on the first line, he was reading in all the Toronto papers, he was getting pressed like there was no tomorrow, he was afraid of it, or you know, he wasn't didn't value it, some one of the two things. But I think being on the fourth line, he can hide, he's for a big guy, he can make plays, he's strong, he knows how to score. He's got 14 with the Bruins in 50-some games last year. So, I mean, he's just going to take time to get used to the whole Toronto setting.
in conversation with Bruce Boudreau, longtime NHL head coach, analyst with the NHL Network. Tonight, Leafs in Chicago taking on the Blackhawks, a game you can listen right here on TSN 1050. What do you think the game plan should be for the Leafs out of the gate tonight, going up against a Chicago squad that, you know, also not playing well? I mean, who does this mean more to tonight, Chicago or Toronto?
Well, Chicago's got enough problems. I mean, they expect them to lose with, you know, eight members out on COVID. I mean, three coaches and five players. And with the unfortunate news of yesterday. But I sincerely think that if the Leafs lose in Chicago tonight, that Maple Leaf Nation will go nuts.
It'll be a meltdown tomorrow.
It'll be a meltdown, that's
there
for sure.
It'll be a total meltdown. And I'm going, I think sometimes the fear of losing is the best motivator. And if the Leafs watch those games I talked about, and they're not dumb. All of those guys know what it's, you know, especially the veterans that have been playing in Toronto know what's going to happen if they lose. I think you'll come up and you'll see them play their hardest game of the year for sure.
I'll get you out on this one here, Bruce. You know, Alex Ovechkin off to an unbelievable start, 7 goals in 6 games. You coached him back when he was younger. Are you surprised that he is still contributing and still playing at such a high rate that he is so late into his career?
Nope, not at all. I think this guy is, he is determined. He is, you know, I mean, he is so strong. He will never lose his shot. And he's got an extremely high hockey IQ. I think he's going to, the unlike thing of Wayne, when Wayne got older, he was a lot more slight. You know, Alex is still 235 pounds and, you know, a mountain of muscle. I think he's, hasn't surprised me, and, it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, competes for the Rocket Richard Trophy again this year, and that means 40 to 50 goals, and, he's just an amazing athlete.
Yeah, he just keeps rising up the ranks of that goal-scoring list and just keeps getting ever so closer to Wayne there. Bruce Boudreau, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Bruce Boudreau, longtime NHL head coach, former Maple Leaf as well,
and
NHL analyst for the NHL Network. Yeah, Ovechkin's start is just unbelievable.
What a
right
guy.
Now.
I love Ovi. Ovi's the best.
Did you see he scored the other night with a broken stick?
Yeah, he just can do anything.
Well, I think he blocked a shot with his stick and then ended up on a breakaway and realized that the stick was broken, I think, like halfway through. And you could see him shift his hand down the shaft a little bit and grab it like lower so that it didn't snap on him, and then knew that he couldn't shoot it, but he had to deke out the goalie and just like slide the puck and just kind of poke it through the legs. I think it was Anton Forsberg in net. Maybe it was Gustafsson at that point. It was pretty late in the game. I know that they both played. But it was just like, how does he have the foresight to realize that in a game, like, oh, my stick is broken. I'm not going to be able to put pressure on it or it's going to shatter. And A, this is illegal. So if it breaks, I'm probably going to get a penalty because I didn't discard my stick. And he just had the foresight.
That's Ovi stuff,
play,
man.
Like, score that goal. It was absolutely incredible. And that's why he's, in my opinion, the greatest goal scorer of all time.
100%. He's mine, too.
Absolutely. I'm Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. She's Julia Tesheri. We're going to chat with Katie Strang of The Athletic Next. She's been covering this Blackhawks story kind of the whole way. So we'll chat with her and get her thoughts on what transpired yesterday and, I guess, over the course of the last decade. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Welcome back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. I'm Julia Tesheri. I've got Al's brother, Mike DiStefano, with me as always. We spoke about the Chicago situation off the top in the show. The Athletic's Katie Strang and our own Rick Westhead have been at the forefront of reporting this story. And had it not been for their tireless investigative reporting, a lot of this may not have come to light. First of all, Katie, thank you so much for your pursuit of the truth in this case. These stories aren't easy to tell. I can only imagine how much it must weigh on you to uncover these gruesome details. And in saying that, I'll warn our listeners that some of the details of this case are gruesome and they center around sexual assault. Katie, the full report of the investigation's findings were made public yesterday. You've been covering this story for a long time. What struck you the most from this report? I know that it's a very long report and there was a lot to unpack.
Yeah, there was quite a bit to digest, and I think it was a really heavy, difficult day for probably everyone in the hockey community. I think if you had to ask me to pinpoint one thing that really struck me, it was the way in which, you know, winning and results were clearly prioritized over, you know, the well-being, safety, and protection of players. And I think, you know, for a sport that talks about character quite a bit, I think the level of inaction and the level of regard for those things in terms of prioritizing players was shameful.
Yeah, the 2010 championship definitely feels tainted. We have a show about the Leafs, and a lot of the criticism around the Leafs team is that there's too much focus on individualism. And that they don't play as a team or a unit. They don't buy in enough. The root of the problem with this whole Chicago Blackhawks case is what you just said. They chose winning at all costs. And hockey culture so often values not being a distraction over being an individual. Is this whole case just a prime example of when that culture goes too far?
You know, I think there's a lot of layers here. I think, you know, when you talk about sexual abuse and sexual abuse in sports, and especially some of the more specific stigma when it comes to male victims of sexual abuse, there's a lot of layers, there's a lot to unpack. But I think, you know, when you take a broader look at systemic cultural issues, the thing that's really glaring to me is that, you know, there are barriers for people to feel comfortable and safe coming forward and disclosing and speaking up about, you know, things that have happened to them or things that they've witnessed to others. I think we've seen a lot of examples, not just in hockey, but in other sports where, you know, players, athletes, you know, livelihoods, their dreams, their hopes, their goals are weaponized against them by predators. And, you know, that is definitely a very problematic thing. But, you know, I think we have to really focus here on the fact that there were people in positions of power and authority who had quite a bit of influence and cachet within the organization who were notified about very serious allegations and who did nothing. And I think there is probably the beginning of a reckoning happening where, you know, I think stakeholders in the sport of hockey are recognizing that's not good enough. I mean, that's derelict in your duty. It's no longer, you know, adequate to just care about the on-ice product and wins and losses. It's you have to be able to prioritize the right things. And in order to run, you know, an organization in, you know, with any conscience, you have to be respectful of the players and the people under your care.
In conversation with Katie Strang of The Athletic, I'm curious about what you think this means next for guys like Joel Quenneville and Kevin Cheveldayoff, who both had previously denied knowledge of the allegations, news, and, you know, based on the report that clearly was false information. At least Joel Quenneville seems like he knew what was going on. But news coming out of Florida today that Quenneville is going to meet with Gary Bettman tomorrow in New York. And Quenneville was speaking today, actually, with the media. And I don't know if you've heard the clip. I'm going to play it for you in just a moment. I want to get your thoughts on it.
Before we get started, I just want to let you know that tomorrow I'll be meeting with Gary Bettman. I look forward to continuing to contribute to the process. I know I respect you all doing your jobs and having your questions as well here, but I won't comment any further to the appropriate time after I meet with the commissioner.
Is that meeting here or are you flying up north?
I believe it's in New York.
Okay. Did you talk to anybody within the team today? Do you have a team meeting?
We had several little quick meetings about different subjects.
Yeah, I would assume that was one of them.
It was addressed.
Any problems you feel within the room? Do you feel like this could be a distraction? Anything of that sort?
I think we tried to eliminate all distractions, and that was one of them.
Okay, I just want to get your thoughts on that. I think that last final comment is one that didn't really quite sit well with me, knowing that that's somewhat exactly what happened back in 2010, eliminating distractions to win at all costs.
Yeah, I find that deeply troubling and problematic. And in fact, my coworker Sarah Sivian, mentioned this yesterday too. Like, characterizing this as a distraction, I think is, you know, really, really hurtful and really shows sort of the lack of understanding the severity and egregiousness of what has happened. I'll be very straightforward and unequivocal about this. If either of those two men knew about the allegations and did nothing, which the report suggests, they are not fit to lead. Mm. There's not a ton of nuance there for me. If you cannot be expected to do the right thing, even when it's hard, even when no one's looking, even when it comes, you know, at potential personal cost to you or your team, then you are not fit to lead. That's it.
Yeah, Katie, the Blackhawks were fined $2 million after reviewing the report. Just comparing it to other fines teams have been hit with, was that enough for you?
I mean, you know, when you compare it relatively, it's such a paltry amount. But, you know, I don't think, to me, even like quibbling over any sort of like monetary or fiscal punishment is kind of missing the point, which is, you know, they're... I don't think those types of punishments act as an appropriate or an effective deterrent.
Yeah.
I think for there to be a cultural shift in what we accept and what we do not accept of our leaders and our stakeholders in the hockey community, there have to be serious consequences. And so I definitely think, you know, there needs to be very clear boundaries about expectations of how people handle sexual assault, misconduct, abuse allegations. And that needs to be just the standard, the baseline of, you know, what people in positions of power are expected to do.
Yeah, and I know Stan Bowman was stepped down, which is what they're deeming it as, terming it as. I thought that his statements yesterday left much to be desired. Almost seemed like he was passing the blame onto somebody else. Just curious what your thoughts on that was, and if you think there's any future in hockey for Stan Bowman.
I'm in total agreement with you on that statement. I felt like it was lacking in introspection. I thought it was lacking in accountability.
Yeah.
And I thought it was utterly devoid of any level of empathy toward John Doe. And to me, really felt like an attempt to deflect blame onto others.
How do you think the
and
NHL...
And so again, I would go back to the point, like, if that's how you handle a situation of that severity, you're not fit to lead. So in that scenario, no, I don't think you should have a future in hockey.
Yeah, I totally concur. How do you think, Katie, the NHL creates or starts to at least create an environment where they can ensure that something like this never happens again? Because we saw this kind of in the late 90s with a junior coach where it was a reckoning back then and they vowed it would never happen again. But here we are in 2021 kind of in a similar scenario. So what's the framework? How does the NHL move forward from this?
I think there have to be some built-in protections for people who want to speak up and want to escalate concerns in appropriate ways, but are worried about the potential cost to their own jobs or livelihoods, or any sort of retribution. Essentially, like, I think there need to be whistleblower protections in the NHL. And I'm not, when I talk about protections here, I'm not talking about people in positions of power and authority, like senior leadership that was told, you know, in that meeting in Chicago. I'm talking about people, you know, whose job security is much more tenuous, whose livelihoods are sort of much more on that thin razor's edge. I think we have to be able to empower and protect those to feel safe enough to speak up. And I mean, that goes, you know, for players as well. I mean, this player disclosed something very painful and personal and private and traumatic. And this is what he got as a response. Like, I can't imagine how much additional trauma he must have endured as a result of seeing people utterly fail him every step of the way.
Yep.
Katie, you've covered this story basically the whole way. You know, you're one of the people who've been on this since day one. Are you surprised, though, as to how kind of transparent Blackhawks ownership was yesterday based on how differently the organization's tune was to these allegations when it came to light back in May?
I was somewhat surprised at the level of transparency. And, you know, good for them that they did release the findings of the entirety of, you know, that investigative report. What I would have liked is if they would have done that and allowed people to process it and, you know, allowed people to ask pertinent questions, several which I still feel like are unanswered. But I would say that's a step in the right direction and something that's timely and topical. You know, we saw Roger Goodell being asked about, you know, the Washington football team investigation and, you know, there wasn't a written report produced and furnished in that instance. And so in that way, I do feel like that was a small step forward. And I hope what that is an understanding and acknowledgement that more transparency and accountability is required in the future to prevent these things from continuing to happen.
Absolutely. Katie, really, really want to thank you for joining us today. I know that it's been a tough little while for you who's been on the beat since the start of all of these allegations, and really just want to thank you for your great reporting.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Katie. Katie Strang, senior writer and investigative reporter for The Athletic. You know, it's a tough discussion to have, right? Like, these aren't the topics you like to cover when you get into sports media and sports radio and whatnot, but it's, you know, this stuff happens.
Yeah.
This stuff happens.
It speaks to the importance of people like Rick Westhead and Katie
Absolutely.
Strang, because there's people like us who like to talk about hockey, and there's real, real value in investigative journalism and sport, and there's not enough of it. Like, this would have never seen the light of day if those two people specifically hadn't been like dogs on a bone with it. So full kudos to them.
Yeah, I'm in total agreeance with you. We'll continue to kind of track the story in the fallout. We know that there is a meeting set up with Joel Quenneville tomorrow. The most troubling thing to me about this whole scenario kind of is the way that Joel Quenneville denied these allegations so strongly, denied them again, you know, kind of in the summer. And it came out through the report that he apparently did have knowledge of the situation.
Yeah, he was in the meeting and said almost specifically that he didn't want to derail the Western Conference Finals. So it's pretty bad look for Joe Quenneville right now.
Yeah.
It is.
So we'll kind of keep track of what's going on there. We expect more fallout as more information kind of comes to light, as Gary Bettman speaks with Kevin Cheveldayoff, the Jets GM, as well as coach Joel Quenneville, the head coach over in Florida. We'll take a quick break here. I'm Al's brother, Mike DeStefano. She's due it to Sherry. We are going to tell you how you can win some Leafs tickets on the other side. Plus, we're going to hit the power rankings. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Leafs Lunch is brought to you in part by Lease Busters. It's so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace, Lease Busters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to leasebusters.com. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. I'm Julie Teixeira from Bar Down. Got Al's brother, Mike DeStefano, with me as always. And it's time now for for our Leafs Lunch Power Rankings, brought to you by WeatherTech Automotive Accessories. Get the ultimate custom fit floor protection for your car, truck, or SUV. Go to weathertech.ca. Nothing protects like WeatherTech.
Leafs Lunch Power Rankings, brought to you by WeatherTech.
Okay, pretty convenient timing, but it came out yesterday that the David Ayers story, that infamous game against the Leafs, yes, they got beat by a Zamboni driver, is now in the works to becoming a movie, a feature film for Disney. It's literally the last thing that Leafs fans need to hear right now, but because Leafs fans are Leafs fans, this is what they've been served. AB, but it got us thinking about other Leafs moments that we would never, ever, ever want to see made into a feature film. So you want to kick us off with our top three?
Yeah, let's go through our top three here. Now, we are of the younger generation, let's say. So these are more so of our memory bank. In the last, like...
My brain starts to work. Just to let me just set the scene. I'm born in 1998. My brain starts to turn on, like that little on switch flicks on around like 2004. Like that's when things start to be pictures for me, like when I could start to see things.
Right. I'm like slightly earlier than that, but like there are so many like dark, I mean, the Ballard years.
Yeah, like if
awful.
We got my dad on the phone right now, we could have a long chat. If we got my Papa Guido on the phone right now, we could talk for even longer.
Exactly.
So this is what we remember.
This is what we remember of recent memory, right?
Yeah.
Three things of recent memory that we just don't want to be made into a movie. We'll start from three. We'll work our way down to one.
Cool.
But at number three coming in, the 18-wheeler.
This is akin to an 18-wheeler going right off a cliff.
Like, this was...
I rate the honesty.
I do. It's great. It's great. He was... Listen, Brian Burke was amazing for a quote all the time. He's one of the most...
Gives a great quote.
Yeah, one of the most quote-worthy GMs of all time. But, like, the 18-wheeler was something else. I mean, just the fact that they went into the year, they're, like, in the playoffs and, you know, comfortably into it, and then just... fell off a cliff, was like 9 points out of a playoff spot by the end of the year after being like 9 points in a playoff spot in like February. It was just ridiculous what happened in that season. I do not need to relive that at all. Like that was, the 18-wheeler goes down as one of the worst seasons in Maple Leafs history.
Yeah, not one that we really want to look back on, and definitely not one that Leafs fans would ever want a movie on.
No.
Okay, number two, Salute Gate. You remember this one?
Oh,
AB, yeah. It was after, what year was this? 15, 16?
Yeah, because FNUF was still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it would have been around then.
Loophole, I remember.
Yeah, they were all here.
I loved Loophole when I was 15. Of course I did. What a standard thing of me to say for a 15-year-old girl. Anyways, end of the game, end of the season. Was it?
It was at the end of the season, but it was just like it was going bad, and jerseys were getting tossed on the ice. I think this was around like waffles were getting tossed and all that.
Oh my gosh, that was the waffle thing.
Yeah, it was all around the same time, and it was just
how
bad.
How did you even get a waffle in?
I don't know. You shove it in your pants, I guess. I mean,
I don't know. Security's pretty tight in that neck of the woods.
People get like octopuses into these things.
Fair
but
enough.
Anyway, but then I guess they had this genius idea where they just weren't going to salute the fans at center ice, something that they've done. Like, this is a daily tradition. You salute your fans. Thanks for coming out. I know we didn't put up the W because we never do during that time of the year, but the fans still came out. Yeah, they booed. Yeah, they jeered you and they gave you the gears. But at the end of the day, they're still spending money and going to these games. And then just to kind of disrespect the fan base like that, Salute Gate, I remember being a really big deal at the time. And, you know, Dion Phaneuf kind of had to wear that one a little bit.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember this. Sometimes I feel like I don't remember certain things to be as big of a deal as you guys do, being near the Toronto area. I'm serious, because like I don't know, I didn't grow up around that many Leafs fans other than myself, so I don't remember Salute Gate. I remember the 18-wheeler being just because it was so quotable and it was on a loop on SportsCenter, but I don't remember Salute Gate as clearly. I just kind of remember, I don't know, it didn't hit
but
me as hard.
I guarantee you remember number one on our power rankings.
Oh my god, yeah.
The Game 7 collapse back in 2013, the Toronto Maple Leafs up 4-1 late in the third period, and then lose that game in overtime and get eliminated. And because of that, the streak has still persisted that they have not won a round in the playoffs. And that was probably their best bet to do it. And then the sequel came in 2018 when they were up 3-2. Kadri takes the suspension, and then they go ahead and they lose Game 6 and Game 7, and then it's just over from there. I mean, oh, the Game 7 collapse of 2013 probably is undoubtedly, from my generation, our generation, like the worst thing that has happened to Maple Leafs Nation.
I was almost in tears in the third period. I was almost in tears. I was sitting on my couch with my dad, and I was almost in tears. My dad was looking during the first period. My dad was looking at round two playoff tickets. Like, oh, we were going to go. The positive fallout from the 2013 collapse was that my family got a projector screen TV afterwards, so there was less likelihood of my dad smashing it with remote control. So, well, that's the positive fallout.
Funny enough, my experience, I wasn't actually watching the game live. So I was on the set of a movie, which, funny enough, that's exactly how this idea kind of spawned here. So my brother was a child actor, and my parents were away on vacation, so I had to take him to Hamilton to do this movie or whatever. So, but I remember it was on my birthday at that. On my birthday, yeah. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Here's a Leafs collapse. But I remember watching the crew listening to the game on the radio.
Yeah.
And I just remember, I'm like, oh, are you listening to the Leafs game?
Bonesy,
like,
on the call,
we are.
For
Bonesy
sure.
Bonesy on the call. It was hopefully on TSN. And I remember going over there and be like, what's going on? They're like, oh, they're up 4-1 the third period. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I recall them just getting dejected, you know, when the 4-2 goal comes, and then 4-3. And all of a sudden I go over there and I look at them like, what's going on? They're like, it's going to overtime. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding
me? There was no way they were winning that game once it went to overtime.
And then it went to OT.
When it was 4-3, that there was no way they were winning that game.
No, everybody knew that game was over.
Yeah.
The Leafs are incapable of winning that game, just like it's seemingly incapable of winning games in today's era as well. And tonight they got a big one that is, like, it's not must win, but this is a game that you gotta win.
Yeah, you gotta win this one,
right? Going up against Chicago, like, there's the off ice, you know, thing that's going on in Chicago, but on the ice they're missing five players, including Patrick Kane and John Tavares.
Yeah,
like, you gotta go in there, you gotta blow the doors off this team, you gotta win big. So if we're taking a look at, you know, the betting proposition of tonight's game, clearly the Maple Leafs are going to be favored to win this game. They're -192 on the money line. But if you believe Toronto, if this is the game that the floodgates open, like, Chicago has been the worst team in the NHL to start the year. They're giving up the most chances out of anybody, and they've been a tire fire in their own end. I mean, much like Toronto, but this could be the game that the offense finally erupts. We've been saying this for a little bit, but I think tonight could legitimately be the night. And if you think that's the case, I think the puck line is where the value is here. You can at least get plus money at +125. So you throw down $100, you win $125. The over-under is set at 6. Do you think Tavares scores a goal tonight?
Do you think John Tavares modeling for Lululemon adds any little goal scoring oomph to his game? Because that red jacket, though, JT, and the middle part, JT, there's a lot to unpack from those photos. Steph, I think we should tweet them out. We'll tweet them out. There's a lot to unpack. Amazing photos.
But hopefully those photos means that he's feeling good. You feel good. You play good. You play, look good.
Olympic-like.
You look good. You play good. So hopefully he scores a goal tonight. You can get that at +200. Also, it's the easiest way to win Leafs tickets. Follow at TSN1050 on Instagram. Find our latest giveaway posts and tag who you'd bring to see the Leafs versus Las Vegas on Tuesday, November 2nd. A winner will be announced tomorrow right here on Leafs Lunch. So make sure you return to Leafs Lunch. We'll be giving away those tickets tomorrow. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on TSN1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Juliet DeSherry. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. Gameplay with Matt Cause next.